You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jaguars podcast. I am Tony Wiggins, along with Philip Pruse. That's Jacksonville, at Jacksonville on Twitter for him, and at Shop Talking Wig for me on Twitter. And this is the Locked On Jaguars podcast. A lot of busy stuff going on today, man. We're just going to get right to it. There's been a lot of speculation about Telvin Smith, his whereabouts, what his intentions are, and his relationship with the team. He sent out a little bit of a cryptic message about how he's Duval until we die, and that he's not getting traded and not playing for another team, and all of those rumors run away, but he's still here, and all of these things. And he said more information will come out later this week. Well, we got some information. I don't know if it's going to be a satisfactory amount of information, Phil, for people to really understand or be comfortable with the decision and the choice that Telvin has made. And I'll let you finish talking about that.
Yeah, so I'm going to read for anybody that missed it throughout the course of the day today. Telvin Smith put out an Instagram post today. Quote, "It was said to me from a great coach that in order to for the man to be his best, he must get his world in order. At this time, I must take him time away from this game and get my world in order. I must give this time back to myself, my family, and my health. I appreciate all the support I will and will not get. I just ask y'all to respect my decision to not play football this season. I know the rumors of trade talk came about, but I started my career in Jacksonville, and the day I do decide to call it quits will be right here in Duval. I love y'all, and even in my time off, it's hashtag 10 toes down. You feel me? Love."
And I'm confused. I'm really, really confused by that part of it. And I know you have another statement that you're going to read, but I'm perplexed when you break it down. He said that he needed to step away from football for his health. The first thing I think of when I think about that is like the Boylan kid from San Francisco, that maybe he has some issues of dealing with some symptoms of CTE or concussions, because you don't see very many people in their late 20s or in their, 26, 27, mm-hmm. in the prime of their career, when they're scheduled to make $5 million at a position where that's pretty good money, decide that they don't want to play this year. And so you start to thinking, okay, are you being forced to not play? I heard rumors of a possible suspension, but he hasn't been in the program. If Telvin did get suspended for any kind of substances, Telvin would only miss four games. So that necessarily in itself wouldn't be the reason why he would take off all of that time, the entire season. Or maybe, you know, without speculating too much, those issues may be tied together. Those rumors or those issues or those speculative thoughts may be tied together. So then he says, if and when I decide that I'm not going to play, and I'm paraphrasing here, when I decide that I'm not going to play, then I'll retire a Jaguar. He almost certainly knows that he'll never play for another team. For him to make those statements, it doesn't sound like he has a desire to play for another team. It sounds as if he decides to continue, he knows he'll have an opportunity here to do that. So that's why this all gets really, really weird to me. And then it even got more weird when I heard, when I read the statement from the Jaguars. And Phil, you take us there too. And let's see what the Jaguars had to say.
Statement from the Jacksonville Jaguars: we will not have a comment about Telvin Smith's statement at this time. We need to have a conversation with Telvin to understand the situation and the circumstances. If there is a way we can support him, we need to understand that.
If there's a way we can support him, not we will, not we will give him our support. If there's a way that means that there's a lot of stuff that they don't even know.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, if there's a way we can support him, we need to understand that. We need to understand that means we need to understand the situation. Look, if this was a league mandated suspension for substance, make no mistake about it, the team would already know about it, because they would understand that he would have a chance to appeal the process. The team knew about Aaron Colvin's suspension when Colvin got suspended.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing, and I knew about it. I knew about it through a third party that knew someone close to the situation. But for me, one of the things that I try to do a little bit of reasoning here, the Randy Gregory situation, and I'm not saying that this has anything to do with marijuana or mental health, but in the Randy Gregory situation, you notice that the league, and even with the Josh Gordon situation, but specifically Randy Gregory, because Randy Gregory hadn't really accomplished much as a player, the league has a very sympathetic approach when they deal with Randy Gregory, and the league has an approach with Randy Gregory where they are combining his failed drug tests with mental health. And they're very, very supportive, and it's clear, and it's almost as if the commissioner's office all of these years has been pulling for Randy Gregory, and every single time he gets reinstated, they seem to have this happy kumbaya moment, like this is a big deal. There are a lot of people in Randy Gregory's situation that they wouldn't get, and they haven't received the benefit of the doubt, and they haven't received the chances over and over again that Randy Gregory still has a shot to come back and play in the NFL, and I'm sure the league. So there is some history here, and there's a precedence where the league has sort of compounded those issues in terms of it being in a best interest of the player situation. So I'm not saying that's what it is here, but with so little information, you try to put two and two together, Phil, and sometimes things don't add up.
Yep.
But the thing for me is, and I don't know how you feel about it, I'm a little bit biased. It's not because I'm a Florida State supporter. I'm not an alumni. It's because I've interacted a lot with Telvin in the locker rooms, a couple of times away, not on personal time, it was on business time, but it was a couple of times away. And I see his passion. I see his passion for people. I see his passion and love for the city. And you just wonder, is he really, really going through something where he needs to get a handle on it? He's had the entire offseason, and maybe he realizes he can't give football everything that he needs to give it right now. But there's a big part of me that is concerned about Telvin Smith, the person, not Telvin Smith, the football player who may or may not have handled this the way that some people feel he should have.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're a really good person to be able to chime in on this stuff, because like you've mentioned, you've been able to interact with Telvin on numerous occasions. And what I did today was I kind of listened throughout the radio and basically compiled a bunch of people's takes on the Telvin Smith situation throughout the day. And the CTE stuff is the first time that I heard that perspective. So I think that's going to be a really unique thing to think about as Jaguars fans try to digest everything that's happening with Telvin. I know Hayes Carline compared it to a Ricky Williams situation. So I don't know if he knows any more information about potential substance abuse or anything on that front. Pete Prisco today, something that he said when he was on the radio with 1010XL on the Frangie show, he said, Tom Coughlin's very sympathetic to players going through personal issues who need support, which is kind of why like Pete Prisco is perplexed as to why he hasn't communicated with the Jacksonville Jaguars, because he thinks that they would be a tremendous outreach system and be able to support him in whatever way he needs to. It just sounds like, based on the Jaguar statement, right, Wig, that there hasn't been that communication. And then I was listening to Rick Ballew tonight, and he had a kind of interesting take, and he said, just think about the message that it sends to other people who need help of whatever he's going through, whatever Telvin's going through, that need help and choose not to use a support system. And I thought that was an interesting way to think about it too. You know, Telvin's obviously affluent. He's getting paid a lot of money. He can go to the best doctors or therapists. Again, we don't know exactly what the issue is, but the fact that he's choosing not to communicate with the team, with his employer, with anyone, and it sounds like his agent, even he can't even get in touch with the agent. So it's hard to make heads or tails from what's going on with Telvin Smith right now.
Yeah. Everybody that you just mentioned, obviously I worked with him before, and I got a tremendous amount of respect for him, and they just don't throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks for the most part. You know, I respect them all. I do differ with what you said, Rick said, and I tell you what, we're up against where we have to take a break. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll discuss this a little bit more and what impact it has off the field as well as on the football field for the Jaguars, because they've made some personnel moves today as they've gotten in a lot of their draft picks signed. We'll also, in the third hour, you did a great interview with our man Eric Galco from Optimum Scouting. He's director of player personnel for the XFL also, and he's going to talk about what the Jacksonville Jaguars did with their draft, what they do with their draft. So I know you got a lot of information coming up with that. So we'll discuss that in just a few minutes, and we'll be right back with more Locked On Jaguars podcast.
All right, guys, let's put Jaguars football aside for a second. Let's talk about something a little bit more stimulating. Let's talk about sex. Remember the days when you're always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com, that's blue like the color blue. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know that it works. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online, shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy. Best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the U.S., and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com, get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it free. BlueChew, better, cheaper, faster choice. And we thank them for sponsoring the podcast.
Welcome back to the Locked On Jaguars podcast. Phillip Cruz along with Tony Wiggins here on a very busy day for the Jaguars, a busy day in May in the offseason. And I tell you, man, one of the things we're discussing right now is with Telvin Smith, a lot of speculation as to what exactly it is that he needs help with, how can the team help him, what does the team know and what they don't know. One of the things about this, and I'll be a little bit transparent, I don't like to be totally transparent because there are some things people tend to think that you're using something as a crutch to make excuses for every single thing that you do right or wrong, especially the wrong. I struggle with mental health. I struggle with mental health on two issues. One is sleep deprivation, and the other is something that I don't really want to necessarily get into. Because I'm actually still dealing with it and still attempting to understand it myself, and I'm still in treatment. It's some things that you can't self-diagnose. You said that I think you said you heard Rick, and he was Rick Ballew today, and he was mentioning that what message it sends to people that are struggling with mental health that don't reach out for help. And all I can tell you is this: that's a part of having mental health issues. A part of having mental health issues is that you can't self-diagnose it. A part of having mental health issues is the guilt that you feel that way with anxiety. A part of having those mental health issues is you don't feel like you want to burden other people with your problems. A part of it is that you feel like you can handle it yourself. It's kind of what gets you in that situation in the first place, where you first have to humble yourself to admit that you have an issue. And then you start to have to deal with what the ramifications are of judgment from other people that don't have a clue as to what you're dealing with and what you're going through. So it's almost as if while a person is attempting to learn how to cope with their issues and getting to admit to themselves that they actually need some help, you can't then get upset at them for having the very symptoms that led them to mental health in the first place. And one of those things is isolating themselves. One of those things is not wanting to be transparent and not wanting people to look at them funny, which actually adds to certain mental health diseases. So you can't hold that against folks when they decide to do that. Because the last thing a person with mental health issues that they're actually trying to work out with, if in case that is the problem, the last thing that they're concerned about is actually being a hero for other people because you don't even have control of yourself right now. In fact, sometimes trying to be a hero for other people is a contributing factor to what leads you to go into the hole that you're in. So there's a lot of unknowns here about this entire situation. It's quite possible that there's a little bit of everything that everyone's mentioned. There's a little bit of CTE. There's a little bit of depressive disorder. There's a little bit of self-medication. There are thousands of cases that all of these things are tied together. The isolation away from the team, the shame of failing a drug test potentially. All of that stuff kind of ties into it, but the average person will say, well, it's just about accountability. You got to mature. You got to grow up. Life ain't that easy for a lot of people, man, especially when you come from where a person like Telvin comes from and you are everything to everyone and you're so outwardly emotional about how you do things and the way you go about things. It's not always as easy as 1, 2, 3 that people and all of those opinions that people have about the situation, all of those things that we put out in the ecosystem, if it gets back to him and he hears it while he's going through it, it'll almost drive him crazy. I've been there. I'm not saying that his situation is mine. I'm not saying that I'm an expert at it because I'm not. I still work hard at it every single day, man. But it's so easy to come up with, well, why this and why that? Well, you know what? If Telvin Smith had those answers, Telvin Smith might not be in the situation that he's in or the situations that some of us are speculating that he's in. So one of the things is from a football perspective, how does this affect the team? Well, I can tell you one thing. Him not being there for OTAs, those other 50-some-odd guys that you imagine might be on this team or the 90-some-odd guys that actually participated in the offseason program, every one of them to a man. In fact, Jalen has already tweeted it out. Get right, man. These guys love each other way beyond anything that we could imagine. On the football team, how does it hurt? I'd already started putting my mind around the fact that Telvin wouldn't be there anyway. Mm-hmm. Whether it was because of all the rumors, because of the rumors of him being traded or whatever, I'd already started thinking he wasn't going to be around anyway, and they were going to play Miles Jack at weak side linebacker, and they were going to try to either phase him out or trade him. That's what I thought. So it doesn't really hurt the Jaguars in terms of what I believe is going to happen on the football for them in terms of personnel.
All the things that you talked about, all that built up anxiety and angst can certainly contribute to the question as to why he hasn't been in touch with the team. So it's something that everybody just has to be sensitive to, and you know, don't make any judgments or anything like that until everybody has all this information. And first and foremost, most importantly, Telvin Smith has to take care of himself. He's walking away from close to $10 million. So he wouldn't be doing that if it wasn't important to him, and if it wasn't, you know, a huge priority to him. So just got to make sure that he first and foremost takes care of himself and worry about everything else later. But with that being said, it does have ramifications on the rest of the team that we have to talk about, right? Actually, our guy Joel Corey tweeted out today in terms of the impact it could have on the team cap-wise and financially. Joel tweeted, Telvin could end up on the reserve retired or possibly reserve did not report list, assuming Telvin Smith doesn't have a change of heart, which is always possible, right, Wig? They get a change of heart. There's a long time between now and September. Joel continues, $9.75 million base salary won't be paid, and $5 million guarantee should void. Jags would get $9.75 million in salary cap relief. $810,235 of signing bonus could be recaptured.
Yeah, you know, so one of the ways that you could look at it, that is this. Okay, hypothetically, if he's facing some kind of suspension, it's a 4-game deal. With the way you think that with the way everything is with the agreement they have with the NFLPA about the program, that's pretty much the way that goes. So he could show up, work out. They could then say you're not ready, and they place him on the PUP list, or he goes on the suspended list for 4 weeks or whatever. And then the ball would be in their court to either activate him or not activate him, but then they'd still have to pay him the rest of his money, and he wouldn't have to give them back the amortization of his signing bonus, which is $810,000. He wouldn't owe him anything. They'd owe him the prorated amount for the next 12 weeks for the rest of his money. He could do that, or he could say, you know what, he could do what he's doing now, lose his guarantee, have to possibly pay back the $800,000 if the Jaguars want it back. And then at some point when he decides to come back, if there was something that he had to deal with, he would still then have to deal with it. And, it makes me really, really believe that there's something going on with him that he really, really needs to handle. That's not that I think it's beyond the discipline aspect, because if it's the discipline part of it, then why would you give up all of your money?
Right.
I think he really doesn't believe he can be around a team right now. They released two guys today, and you saw me on Twitter telling people thought that linebacker shouldn't have been addressed. I absolutely thought linebacker was addressed. I told folks, just because you know guys' names, you're privy to knowing these guys' names because you follow the team. It doesn't mean that because you recognize the names that they're actually going to be here. Doesn't mean that. You can always upgrade. And it appears that they believe they've upgraded in the draft, and they've upgraded in free agency with signing street guys like Ramiq Wilson, who've played and good, who've played for other teams. So they appear to be going in a different type of direction with the type of guy that they want. A little more beef, guys that are a little bit more versatile, that have played different positions, which speaks to that hybrid stuff we've been talking about, that they're just not going to run that same vanilla base defense trying to find guys to just fit that defense. They're just going to find guys who play with a lot more experience, and they're going to play them at linebacker. So on the field, I don't think it's that big of a deal, because in my mind, because of everything that had transpired in the offseason, I kind of looked at Telvin Smith as someone that appeared to be expendable because he wasn't as dependable as the Jaguars wanted him to be, and it appeared from a financial perspective that they were going to move in a different direction. One of the things that did intrigue me today, though, was Cody Kessler. I've had talks with Dave Caldwell before. Dave Caldwell was sold on Cody Kessler. I think what happened at the end of the year is they gave Cody Kessler the job to say, okay, let's see what you can do, and he was actually worse than Blake Bortles to me. So Cody Kessler released today. It looks like they're going in with the rookie as the backup, the sixth-round pick, kid out of Washington State. This is one position that I really want the Jaguars to figure out a way to shore up. Because Chad Henne was Chad Henne, and I understand that, and I know it's going to sound like I'm saying two different things. But I like a guy who's thrown some balls to be your backup. I just don't like that guy to be Chad Henne. I don't like going into the season with a rookie as your main backup quarterback for a team that has a roster the way the Jacksonville Jaguars have the rosters. You know who I think the kind of backup they need to have? The kind of backup I think they need to find, and I don't know if there's one out there or not. They need to find a Nick Foles. Believe it or not, the guy that you just gave $88 million to for the last 2 years has been the backup to a team in Philadelphia. That's what you need to do. You need to find a guy who can, over a four-game stretch, really give you a legitimate chance to hang in there. I think Jacoby Brissett is that guy. Up in Indy, you have to find, whether it's a Brian Hoyer or somebody like that, you have to find a dude that has played some, that's going to be your backup, that get Colt McCoy, somebody that has played a little bit more than Cody Kessler, that's definitely played more than this kid. I know everybody loves him from Washington because he wears weird clothes and has a mustache, and they're making him a character. All that stuff is fine, but I think that stuff is going to be overblown anyway. If you ever see him on the field this year, that means the Jaguars are in trouble. That's just the way I feel about it.
Yeah, that's true. And I was, to be honest with you, I was a little bit surprised with the release of Cody Kessler today. I know they insinuated that they wouldn't have five quarterbacks going into camp, but I thought that that quarterback that was going to get the axe was Tanner Lee, not Cody Kessler. I thought they were going to at least let Cody Kessler go through the motions, and maybe he'd be a September cut or an August cut. I wasn't expecting him to do it this early. And I mean, they're probably letting him go out and see if he could latch on to another team sooner rather than later. On the backup quarterback front, everybody knows where I stand about the quarterback position. I wanted them to take Dwayne Haskins. I'm not going to open that box of worms. Dwayne Haskins did not come here. It's over. Case closed. Whatever. And it looks like they feel that Gardner Minshew's football intelligence is equitable to one of those guys that you described, to Colt McCoy and all those. in the event that Nick Foles goes down. And the only thing he is missing, Wig, is that experience, like you said. But I think Gardner Minshew is going to end up being a 10 to 12 year NFL backup because he's programmed and built to be exactly that, and that's his role. But to your point, if Nick Foles does go down, which history shows is a very real possibility because he's never played more than 13 games in a season, they are in trouble. So they put all their eggs in the Nick Foles basket, and for better or for worse, that's what it's going to be. Going back to the linebacker situation, my guess right now would be that they would move Miles Jack over to the weak side position, let Jake Ryan get a stab at the middle linebacker position. Jake Ryan did not sign a cheap deal. He did sign a cheap deal for 2019, $1.5 million, but he has a 2020 option that will pay him $5.5 million, Wig. So they definitely dangled a little bit of a carrot in case something like this did come up and he had to, you know, end up starting this year inside linebacker, do some hybrid stuff, what have you. And that way, if make a case for him to stay for that 2020 salary.
Phil, I know you are going to speak with Eric Galco here in our third segment of the show from Optimum Scouting. And Eric is also the director of player personnel of the XFL, and he has some interesting things to say about the Jaguars draft. So we're looking forward to that. We'll get into that in the third hour, and we'll be right back here on the Locked On Jaguars podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Jaguars. I've got a very special guest on the line here with us in Eric Galco. If you're not familiar with Eric, you've probably been living under a rock in addition to being president of Optimum Scouting. Eric is director of player personnel for the XFL Football League, launching in 277 days from today, as well as director of player personnel of Your Call Football. You can find Eric on Twitter, at Eric Galco, all one word. Eric, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely, man. A pleasure. I appreciate you having me on, and hope we do more of these in the future. But just had the draft last week, so we're still only, what, a week and a half away from the draft, and it still feels pretty fresh and a hell of a Jaguars draft.
Yeah. So that's my first question, actually. We're now in that mode where we're kind of digesting everything in the halls for every team. You're starting to see all the guys in their new team colors, which is also very exciting. So what do you think of the Jags draft hall in general?
I thought it was incredibly strong, and I think the Jaguars do a really good job of trusting what they know and what they believe ahead of time. You know, the obvious telling by, hey, Josh Allen wasn't expected to be there, and they said, hey, we'll take him. And then Jawan Taylor, a guy that I think most people knew they liked quite a bit, was there in the second round, and they took him, and they didn't second-guess themselves at all, too. And, you know, and the Jaguars do a great job every year, at least the last couple of years, of keeping a strength to strength. You know, knowing you can't have 11 good guys, you got to have 6 or 7 stars and throw the rest up elsewhere. So I thought from that aspect, getting 2 guys that they can maybe expect to start right away in rounds 1 and 2, just like they did with Jalen Ramsey and Cam Robinson. That was the same year, I thought, too, right? I mean, that was Cam Robinson and somebody else, right?
It was Jalen Ramsey round 1 and Miles Jack in round 2.
Miles Jack in round 2. Cam Robinson round 2 last year, same thing, too. So I think the fact that you can get 2 starters and 2 high-end guys in your first 2 rounds are always helpful. And then, you know, some guys I disagree with questionable pick-wise, but overall they kept their run game, they kept their offensive line of strength, and added a top defensive player. I thought it was an awesome draft, all things considered.
Yeah, you know, Josh Allen and Jawan Taylor are 2 guys that a lot of draft pundits had in their top 10s of their final big board, right? And Taylor, I know, was a guy you felt they would probably take at 7 or was definitely in the mix. They said afterwards that he was definitely in the mix for that pick at 7, so good value there. Which of the 2 guys do you think will have a more impactful rookie season for the Jaguars in 2019 out of Allen and Taylor?
Well, I think best case it's Taylor, right? I mean, if Taylor is a high impact guy, it's a much better value at 30, what, 35 when they got him versus Allen, who I think is going to have a lot of upside. I wasn't the biggest personally. You know, obviously, you know, you're part of the Optimum Scouting team, and we all have different grades and college grades than what I may have. But I personally felt that Allen might be a little bit more of a developmental guy that people gave him credit for. You know, I thought Nick Bosa and even Cleveland Farrell, who went above Allen, is not as talented as Allen, but he may need some time. And certainly in Jacksonville, I think he'll get it or not be pressured to produce right away. But I think for Taylor, if they can find an impact, another impact offensive lineman, a really complete what should be a strong offensive line, they very clearly want to run the ball effectively. And to do that, you've got to have three or four high-end offensive linemen along with Leonard Fournette and Reichwell on for their fifth-round pick. So I think if Taylor is a higher-impact guy right away, it'll pay more dividends than if Josh Allen is. But certainly, if they can get two second-contract guys from the first two-round picks for the third straight year, that's hugely helpful for their team moving forward.
Yeah, awesome. And then the Jaguars turned some heads by selecting Murray State linebacker Quincy Williams on day two. It was a pick that actually stumped the truck on NFL Network. Have you gotten any feedback on that pick since the draft or during the draft? What was your reaction?
Yeah, certainly was surprising. And he's a guy that I was aware of Murray State. I've lived in the small school area for a long time, working with all-star games, et cetera. So I have a pretty good feel for those. But even he was a guy that I didn't have expected to be drafted based off our work and even our analytics. But you know, I think the interesting part, and let's go back to Jaywan Taylor, when guys fall in the draft, for medicals especially, those guys don't have a perfect track record of working out, right? So I wouldn't say Jaywan Taylor, because he was maybe a top 10 pick, is going to be super successful because he was picked at 35, right? There's a reason these guys fall. And at the same time, even though we may not know who Quincy Williams is at a high level, and the truck didn't know who he was either, and Daniel Jeremiah didn't either, someone in the Jaguars staff believed enough that they were willing to stake their reputation, this guy could be a high-end player, for them, or at least a quality role player moving forward. So I think it's important to not diminish the fact that some scout or personnel guy said, hey, I believe this guy enough to take him in the third round, and he's probably good enough. And I think it's always safer to assume people are smart than people are not.
Yeah, and any undrafted free agent signings that stick out to you, someone who might have a good shot of making the final roster here in Jacksonville?
Yeah, I mean, first off, you always want to assume that, hey, these guys are not going to stick. I think what happens too often on drafted free agency is fans from all teams or just in general assume these guys are, hey, this guy was going to be a third-round pick and he fell. Again, guys fall for a reason every time. But I think the guy I'm most intrigued by, is Tyree Brady. The Jaguars did a really good job of unearthing underappreciated or undervalued receivers. Certainly who's the receiver they have from
Keelan Cole,
thank you. Sorry. Keelan Cole was a guy that I had earned as well, and I think Brady's a guy that could be that as well. A lot of NFL teams liked him quite a bit. He almost declared as a junior last year before being in this year's draft class, and I think a lot of NFL teams felt he might be a mid-round pick, and he slides out of the draft because receivers are always fickle. So I think he's the guy I'm most intrigued by to be a guy. And then obviously I think Joe Gilles-Harris, the linebacker from Duke, is a guy that's smart, can play on the inside, can be effective there as well in rotation. I think he can add special teams value as well. So those are the two that I'm most intrigued by, because I think before the season, they were thought to be, hey, maybe they're going to be fourth, fifth round picks, and they haven't gotten worse as players, just their situation or injuries have changed that. So I think Brady is a pretty good chance to be a long-term practice squad or maybe late round guy. But again, if you're assuming any of these undrafted guys are going to make the team, you probably should assume practice squad and maybe one makes the roster and that's about it.
Yeah, and like you said, they've had some good luck since Dave Caldwell took over with wide receivers. You mentioned Keelan Cole, another one, Allen Hurns, undrafted, ended up getting a big contract. So, and they didn't end up drafting a receiver. I think a big part of that is kind of scouting ahead and looking forward to the 2020 draft, where it's going to be absolutely stacked and loaded.
On that note, real quick, you mentioned the 2020 draft. Teams, I think, always do their due diligence and looking ahead to future drafts. But this year, talking to teams was the most I felt they looked ahead to a future year draft in the last decade of doing this. And that could be a mixture of things. It could be, A, they feel NFL teams as a whole feel more confident in projecting for the future, whether that's because of analytics or because of added staff members, et cetera. But teams were very well prepared for what parts of the draft class are strong next year. Quarterbacks, most teams had full scouting reports on Tua, Herbert, all these guys ahead of time. So I think teams are either getting smarter about planning ahead and knowing the market, or they realize, like you just did, hey, next year receiver class is so good that we know that enough now to not overinvest in a guy this year. I think it's an interesting point you made.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Just out of pure numbers game, Tyree Brady's a great choice in terms of maybe earning that sixth receiver spot. He's a guy that I thought had a really good week at Senior Bowl. I know I wrote him up for us for Optimum Scouting. So now that the draft's done and there's not going to be too much moving and shaking before the season starts, maybe a acquisition here and there, where do you see the Jags stacking up against the rest of the AFC South from a talent perspective, and do you think they have a shot to contend for the crown with Indy, Houston, Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, they had some, you know, some quarterback issues and some other things going on that made them from a, you know, a couple accurate throws from Blake Bortles from going to the Super Bowl all the way down to the, you know, seventh overall pick of this year. So I don't think they're that far away, and they obviously know that. I think on defense they're not far away. On offense they're not far away either. I think the thing that's going to determine whether the Jaguars are successful this year is not necessarily their personnel, but in my opinion, how they navigate this power run heavy offense with Nick Foles at quarterback. And I think they are purely a team that on paper or just off pure talent, or if Madden properly graded all these guys, they might have the most talented team in the entire NFL, wow, especially on defense. But it's going to matter how they put the scheme together. And if Doug Marone's the right guy to do that, I think he could be. But this team is definitely not about talent. I think they are, especially on defense and in their offensive line, you know, probably as talented as Indianapolis on the offensive line, maybe a little bit less, but definitely more on defense. The Texans have a lot of questions on their offensive line. I mean, the Jaguars are good where you want to be good in today's NFL. And I think if they can find a way to maximize Nick Foles, because, you know, certainly Nick Foles is not light on talent, but he's been light on the adequate scheme to make him successful. And it doesn't look like Jacksonville has a plan in place to make him get that point, but maybe they do. So, again, I'm pretty bullish on the Jaguars this year, and the Titans have question marks across the board. The Texans have question marks across the board. The Colts, I think, are going to be really, really impressive this year, but they're not as completely loaded except at quarterback above the Jaguars. And the Jaguars should be everything to say, hey, we can win the AFC this year. With the Patriots having their downturn, the Steelers having their issues, the Ravens having a quarterback turnover, the Texans and Colts having issues on their front too, that the Jaguars should feel like they have every chance to win the AFC this year.
Well, that's going to make Jags fans really happy. Now, lastly, it's been a busy few days for the XFL. Yesterday, announcing a very attractive TV deal. It's going to see games televised on ABC, ESPN, Fox, Fox Sports. Today, the announcement of Winston Moss as general manager and head coach of the Los Angeles franchise. What's everything looking like for you as we get closer to the process of player procurement, filling out these teams, and what are the timelines football fans can look forward to coming up?
Yeah, it's really exciting, and I think now that we're nearing completion of our head coaches and team presidents, and obviously our head coaches are our GMs for each team, the next step of the process is having a plan and a pipeline to get quality players. And you know, we feel there's a mix of quality players that are not in the NFL right now, whether they either fell through because of circumstance or et cetera. But you know, I think from that pool of players, I always say these guys are not second-tier NFL guys. They are guys that are not in the NFL due to circumstance. They were on an NFL team that, you know, had too many guys in that position, or they got hurt in training camp, or they played at a small school and didn't get a fair shot in the NFL. Those guys are by circumstance available to us. I mean, there's a lot of great players out there outside the NFL. Certainly when NFL training camp cuts happen, we will be prepared evaluation-wise to know who the guys we want to look at and consider and sign. And then, you know, even after that, adding more guys in the NFL season. And then there's always a discussion about college athletes maybe being a part of our player pool, and we'll see how that plays out. We're going to be delicate and gentle with that, but we know it's an opportunity for us to get quality players as well as give people in the market a new opportunity. So I think we've got a lot of places to extract top players, and you know, we'll start making announcements and decisions on how we're going to sign these players, when we're going to sign these players, and who our player pool might look like as soon as June and July. And certainly as NFL training camps come around, we'll have a lot more work to do then.
Awesome stuff. Looking forward to it. It's going to be something that might change the entire landscape of professional football as we know and love. So really looking forward to that. Eric, thanks so much for the time today. We appreciate it. Anyone who is not following Eric, you can do so on Twitter at Eric Galco and also at Optimum Scouting. Thanks so much, Eric. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
There you guys have it. There's another episode of Locked On Jaguars. We will catch you again next week. Have a great weekend, everybody. Went a little long today. Hope you don't mind. Had some great content. A lot of things happening. So we'll catch you next week. See you later.
Well, we got to lock in so bad right now, so hard right now. We got to lock in with each other right now and get on one accord right now. Because if not, we ain't going to survive.